Hey, BA fam, this episode is sponsored by State Farm. Are you a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Hey, it's election day. I'm Tiffany.
I need to be sure we're recording. Hold on. Yes, we are. I am Mandy. Hey, y'all.
And this is
Brown Ambition.
Oh, my goodness. So riddle me this, Mandra. Have you ever seen so much fever for midterm elections before?
I've never felt, I was talking to someone today and I was like, I don't even think, and I'll put myself out there. I'm sure I'm not alone. I don't think I've ever voted in a midterm election.
Me too. I'm not going to lie. I was thinking that to myself. I'm like, have I ever voted in a midterm election? Maybe, because my dad's like really civic minded. So like, I know there's definitely times he's like, you go vote. But honestly, when I tell you, I've never seen so many people. Like young and old, I went to go vote because, of course, like I'm 18 and I still vote in Westfield where I went to high school.
Oh,
so I had to drive back there. But the line, it was an hour. And they said since 6 a.m., the line has not been shorter than an hour long wait. And I'm like, oh, wow, my. People. Yeah. And people are really, you know, even like the advertising, like I just went to Google and instead of Google, it said go vote. And I'm like, wow.
I mean, Beyonce got on Twitter. On Instagram and endorsed a candidate for Senate in Texas, which I was like, kind of low key. She's a little late. Like she posted a couple hours ago, but shout out to her for finally getting her act together.
Yeah. But
yeah. It was the same in New York City. The people who work in my office came in just like looking like they were completely harassed. Like the lines were so long. People like at a voting location in Brooklyn, I heard like the what do you call it? Like the scanning machines or the vote scanner machines weren't working, and there was this massive line. I feel like everyone. It feels like people knew there was going to be like a record turnout, but it doesn't feel like the polling locations got the memo or like actually made any changes to make it easier, because that sucks.
They're already talking about voter suppression in Georgia. I think in mostly some of the voting machines, they didn't bring cords to like to plug them in. And it's only mostly, of course, areas where minorities are. Isn't that so terrible? That guy is the worst in Georgia.
Listen, I cast my vote in New York, but I'm watching my home state. I still consider Georgia because I'm like, please do the right thing, you guys. But also, it's really depressing because it's not just like a new thing for Georgia, this talk of voter suppression. Brian Kemp, the Republican candidate, has been actively trying to suppress votes. I mean, he manages elections for the state. That's like his job.
That's crazy. And he's been sued multiple times and found guilty of it, which I'm like, how is he allowed to still manage then these elections?
It's outrage like that I feel like is the reason there's such, I mean, I almost feel like people have had this pent up aggression. I mean, since day one of, you know, day one post-apocalypse, post 2016 election night, everyone, we were depressed, you know, there was like this depression that fell over a lot, probably over more than half the country. But then it was like midterms. It became like the chant that we shared, like two years, we can finally do something. And I think that's why we're seeing such crazy turnout, but you know, I just wish it was easier to vote, man. It should be so much easier.
Well, they did a lot of like, I saw like more than ever before that people voted early, like early voting. I don't think New Jersey has it because I definitely would have done it.
New York doesn't either, which sucks.
Yeah. So it was just, like I said, I mean, usually like my city or my town that I grew up, Westfield, you know, the turnout is pretty decent. Although, like you said, I don't even know for it actually was there was more people for midterms than it was for the presidential election for when I went in. And I'm like, wow, people are really not playing. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, to be fair, it's not like I go the same time every year, but I don't remember ever waiting that long. I was like, wait. And then they had a little 90-year-old lady who was like checking everyone in. I'm like, why did they have this lady here? She was super nice. But when I tell you the line, I was like, oh my God. Like, it didn't make sense. Like, have her sit by the actual, like little, I don't know, voting booth and just hand you your card. Because for her to have to find your name, sign, I'm like, why do they have grandma doing this? People were looking like, what's happening?
And it's still like reams of paper they're like thumbing through to find your name on the list, yeah. The voter registration documents. I mean, I just feel like it's so antiquated and it's been made. I almost like this whole experience of this midterm election voting, even me trying to figure out how to do absentee ballots because we vote in a county 30 minutes north of Manhattan and I couldn't go vote today because of work stuff. So I went this weekend to try and vote and like the address on the website wasn't actually the address where you can go pick up the ballots. And it was this whole runaround to finally get to the place where I had to cast my vote. And I'm just like, it, you know, we talk about voter suppression the obvious ways, but I feel like the whole like way that but we have elections set up and the polling process and the voting process in this country is a form of it naturally punishes people who don't have transportation, who work 9 to 5, you know, and can't get take off work to go vote. And I would love to, I don't know if I just don't think voters' rights and voters and the voting process is ever like a big campaign issue, but I wish it was. Because can you imagine, like, you can get a flu shot at Duane Reade. What if you could vote, you know, at the drugstore? Or what if you could cast a vote on your phone like you could for American Idol or something like that? I mean, so many studies have shown the fact that, like, voter turnout, you know, is a big reason why we have party lines the way that we do. And it's a big reason why Democrats and liberals or progressives often struggle in races like this, because the people who would vote for them are the least likely to show up.
Yeah. No, you're right. It's definitely like, you know, we're all watching the Stacey Abrams race. We're all watching the Gilliam race. We're all watching just, oh, child, you know, you're just like, my heart, I just don't even want to, I'm just going to go to sleep and wake up. Because last time we thought we had it in the bag, we woke up with a Cheeto for president.
I have zero hope. I mean, I the hope that I have is like, watching my baby brother in Atlanta, who's been canvassing for Stacey Abrams for months now, him and his friends canvassing, like, this is, you know, obviously it's a terrible situation our country is in right now politically, but I can at least take hope in like the fact that young people are really feeling mobilized to get out there and get the vote out. And I don't know that Stacey Abrams might have run if 2016 hadn't happened. So
that's true. Mm-hmm.
There's that bright side. God, I hope she wins, though.
I know.
Come through, Georgia.
I know. But, oh, boy. So other than that, I had to do some real adulting today. My dad was like, whew, because, you know, like I mentioned last week or the week before last, that I paid off he and my mom's mortgage. And he was like, you know, I didn't even mind paying my taxes today. I was like, taxes? Taxes. I totally forgot. Superman and I have to pay taxes on our property because, you know, usually taxes come out with your mortgage, so you don't think about it. But, like, we don't have a mortgage on either of the properties, so I'm like, oh, man. So I had to do some real adulting and, like, add it to, like, my calendar so that way it can send me a reminder. Because typically what they do in Newark, at least, I don't know other towns, is they'll give you the tax coupons for the year. But who's looking at that, you know?
Seriously.
Yeah, so I just went in my calendar and was like, okay, November, February, whatever the other months are. And I put it as a reminder. I gave myself the link because you also have to know like your block lot number, which I guess is like where your property is actually located, and your account number. So I did all of that. So as it pops up, I can be like, taxes are due. I did it like a few days before they were actually due. So I have time to transfer money if need be. But it was just like such an adulting day. Taxes, voting. Oh, my goodness. What next? Giving birth?
I mean, hopefully, right?
Yeah, that is hopefully.
If only it were that simple.
Ooh, Well, one quick thing. This is just a little giggle because we are going to have a kind of like an abbreviated show. Did you see the young woman? Oh, this was funny. The young woman who created a pretend GoFundMe. She was a black college student. She made $150,000 because she wore the red, MAGA hat.
MAGA hat?
Said, like, make it MAGA, make it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And so she said, I can't pay for school. You know, I can't hide it anymore. I just have to say, she said, oh, her name is Reformed Republican. This is on Twitter. I will not hide any longer. The left has made us feel like if us black Republicans, like as if us black Republicans should hide, but not anymore. Blacks for Trump, walk away, MAGA. And then she was like, you know, my parents, thank you so much for your overwhelming support. After seeing my tweet, my parents cut me off and refused to pay for my university tuition. So if you could find in your hearts to help this young black Republican pay for school, it would be appreciated. She started a GoFundMe.
Oh, no.
This girl raised $150,000 and it was like, psych. Then she got a little freaked out because I think people were like, you know what? So she actually decided, like, you know what? She came. Yo, that was hilarious. She even posted fake texts.
What now? Where's the money going to go? Is she going to donate it to
a
good cause or something?
I don't know. She said, I don't know. So this is... Oh my God, some of the stuff that she said is crazy. Trump is a racist, homophobic, transphobic, a bigot, and you think my black ASS would support that rotting carrot? Ridiculous. Any black person can put on an ugly hat and say MAGA, and y'all will instantly be up in their behind because you want to prove so hard that you're not racist. Mm-hmm. And she was like, I don't know how much of the money she's keeping, but I'm like, girl, someone wrote scam of the century.
But she's not wrong. Like, come on. She's like every white Republican's black. They want to make her their black friend.
They do. And I was just like, wow. And I just thought that was hilarious. And I think that, I think she said she was going to get back the money. Meanwhile, she said she refunded most of the donation. No, I don't think she refunded all of them. Yeah. So I think that I just thought that was hilarious, that how quickly people will jump on and give money to a stranger if it supports their racist agenda. And yeah, good for you. You know, I hope you're one of the people that she got. That's a little giggle for the night.
A little giggle. Thanks for that. Let's take a quick break and hear from one of our sponsors.
All right, BA fam, y'all know when it comes to financial advice, you have to trust your source. That's why you listen to Brown Ambition, right? And when I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. I've been a longtime fan of NerdWallet. In fact, I almost worked there a couple of times because when it comes to financial experts and writing, they really know how to give you the best reviews of financial products. I honestly wouldn't sign up for a credit card today if I hadn't looked at a review on a site like NerdWallet myself. And honestly, if y'all haven't learned about NerdWallet, you're missing out. And with their help, what could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access, wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms of each credit card issuer apply.
Okay, it's time for Brown Brews Brown Break.
Hopefully by the time you hear this, the elections, we will be celebrating and we'll be all giddy and you'll be listening to this like, yes, good things, good things, good things. And even if everyone we wanted to win did not win, still, you know, your vote really matters. And I saw a really great quote that it said, if your vote didn't matter, they wouldn't try so hard to suppress it. So just remember that.
Yes. Is that your boost?
Yeah, I guess so. Vote.
Okay. I'll let you get an easy one. I have a slightly off-topic boost. This is actually a break. I'm going to break, but I'll do a little boost just to end on a high note. So first of all, I came across this survey recently, and I just had to mention it. So it's a survey by AARP, and what reminded me of this is one of my cousins just sent me a Facebook invite for like her Pampered Chef, you know, group on Facebook, and I was like, oh God, not another one. And like another cousin is doing like Lulu, what is it, LuLaRoe. And then I got the one cousin who's selling like tea, you know, like the make you lose weight tea. And I'm like, oh my God, multi-level marketing people, like they drive me crazy. And I just think that, you know, I'm pretty adamant that in my mind, at least just from experience or talking to people, that a lot of multi-level marketing organizations, you know, where you take a I became a LuLaRoe seller and I made $5,000. So I'll teach you how to be one and here, buy all this inventory and then you sell it and you can make a bunch of money. Pyramid schemes is another way that they've been, you know, another term for these MLM organizations. They're just really not the best deal for the people at the bottom of the pyramid. That's the whole point. And now there's a little bit of proof. So AARP put out a survey and found that among 20 million Americans who participate or who have participated in multi-level marketing organizations, 90% said they got involved to make money, obviously. However, nearly half lost money and one quarter made no money at all. No money at all, which is sad. I mean, this is a multi-billion-dollar industry, and I'm especially talking to our listeners because I feel like a lot of the people that are targeted for these type of organizations are often women and often minority women. And it can really, you can negatively impact. I feel like it's negatively impacting minority women in this country because they're being sold a bill of goods to sign up for these, you know, different organizations and sell this or sell that, and they're not actually reaping any rewards from them.
You just have to be so careful. I feel like people always target, you know, this population of folks. I mean, have you heard the other one too, where it's like the sweepstakes, you know, those sweepstakes?
No, which one?
The ones where they come to your house with the big clearinghouse sweepstakes.
Oh yeah, publishing yes. clearinghouse. That's like been for forever.
Yes. And so, you know, so there's like this scam that was going on, but it targets these type of things typically target the older population. And so if you've got older people in your life, really checking in on them, because it's very easy for people to get over, because, you know, you get to a certain age, I feel like you're maybe a little bit more trusting, a little bit more open. I don't know. So this is terrible, honestly. So what's the high note, Mandra?
Well, first before I get to the high note, I will say, I know this is a very hot topic. I'm sure we'll get some emails who are mad at me for mentioning MLMs. But listen, the proof's in the pudding, okay? Less than half of people, according to this survey, nearly half of people, according to the survey, lost money and one quarter made no money. So before you sign up for your BFFs or your aunts, you know, to sell this or sell that, just actually look at the math and see if you really will make any wealth from that type of organization.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie. I'm unabashedly anti-MLM. I don't care. People like will be like, oh, but Tiffany, like, I get it that Avon and what is the other one that actually is like a kind of like a real Mary Kay. I get it. But you know what? The fact is, if you're not, most people, the level of work required, most people don't have the time or the inclination. So even if it's actually like a real company, which most are not real, I mean, they might be real companies on paper, but like not real company in actuality. Most people don't have it takes a lot of selling. You have to really have a certain personality for it. So most people are just not built for it. I know I'm not for that, not for someone else's company. So it's usually just not a good thing unless it's almost like, what are those things called when, you go on that little cheap vacation and then they try to sell you,
timeshares?
Timeshare. Yeah. Timeshares work out for like 2% of people who buy them.
Yep.
You know, like, so is a timeshare completely like nobody should ever buy a timeshare? No, I've literally met a handful of people where it worked out amazingly. But for 98.99% of the people, timeshare is a terrible idea. So I'm going to make a blanket statement and say, don't do a timeshare. Don't do an MLM, because for most people, it just doesn't work out. And if you're one of the 1-2% that it works out, great. You're at the top of the pyramid. You made your million while everybody else has suffered.
You suck, boo. No. Let's be petty. Okay, that was my break, and I'm interested to see what you guys have to say about MLM. So send us an email at brownambitionpodcast@gmail.com or hit us up on Twitter at the BA Podcast. You can Instagram us at Brown Ambition Podcast. We are everywhere. If you can't find us, it's your problem. All right. So my high note, I caught myself from doing my boost during the previous question that we answered about credit cards, but I did want to give a boost to the little workhorse that is a City Double Cash Card, because it has been so clutch for us. I don't know if, well, you guys are just starting your renovation, but especially for all the little things that we've purchased for the house. Like I said, there's no like reward. There aren't very good home improvement rewards cards. Like you can get a Home Depot card or a Lowe's card, but they don't have the best benefit. And then you don't get any rewards if you don't shop outside of those stores. So we've been using City Double Cash to get 2% cash back on all purchases you use the card for. And we've made, I was just looking at my statement, I think we've made close to $800 cash back in just the last few months. And it's not the only reason that this card is awesome. And it sounds like I'm doing an ad, but I promise this is, I'm not endorsing them. We don't get paid by them. It's just a cool card that I like. They also have this feature called City Price Rewind, which, have you ever used this card or this benefit?
No, but I'm looking into it.
City Price, it is so clutch. So my husband has become this amazing deal hound for, you know, me buying an oven or a washer or dryer or even the toilets or smoke detectors or what, these little things that you buy. And City Price Rewind, if you buy it with your City card, if the price drops, I think it's, I forget what the time period is, but it's a good amount of time in the future, they will actually find if a price drops. And if it does, they will refund you the money. So we have saved, I need to add it up, but I know we've saved about $500 or more, from the price of our washer dryer dropped a couple hundred dollars at Best Buy. Mm. And you don't have to do anything. Like it just does the work for you. And then you get an email. Yeah.
What is it called again? I'm going to apply.
So it's the city. It's a City Double Cash Card. And the feature is called City Price Rewind. And they may offer that benefit for other city cards. I'm not entirely sure, but definitely on the City Double Cash Card they do. And it has city been awesome.
Okay. No, because I remember I signed up for the, Chase. What is it really, really called? The Chase, the one where I get 100,000 points.
Oh,
like
yeah. The Chase Sapphire Reserve.
Yeah. So I signed up for the Chase Sapphire. Ooh, you know what? I think I told Jeannie Mai the wrong thing. Oh, well, anyway. Because I was on the reel. She was asking me, like, what card do you have? And, you know me. I'm like, why are you asking me questions that I have to remember things? I was like, the Venture. She's like, you like that better than the Reserve? I was like, yeah, girl. Meanwhile, I don't have the Venture. Anyway, she should be fine. I shouldn't be your Jesus of credit cards.
She's not called the credit card Nista, you guys.
But it wasn't on live. It was just like her personally. But anyway, I got that card. And Superman was just saying we need to get, because we're starting to get into the, like right now, the thing that the contractors is doing, we haven't had to buy anything yet. We're getting into the stage where we're going to, like, we have to buy a tub and we have to start getting tile. And so I think it's time for us. So Superman wanted to get like a Home Depot card, but I think I like this better because we're not just getting things from Home Depot. So, City Double Cash Card. He's going to be so pissed when I tell him Mandy suggested. He's going to be like, I suggested we get a card. I'm like, I know, but the wrong one. Yay. You know how, like, I always follow advice from other people sometimes more than, you know, the source eventually. And,
That's okay. Yeah. Don't tell him I said it. Just be like, oh, remember when you said that really smart thing?
Yeah, and I'm learning, right? I'm going to be like, you know what, babe? You were totally right. So I started to look into cards. And I said, well, instead of that, let's get this. You're so smart. That's exactly what I'll do. See? Look at us, wiping 101.
And I will note, because we noted the Chase Sapphire Reserve has a high annual fee, $450. To City Double Cash, what makes it even better is that there's no annual fee and there's no foreign transaction fee either. So if you need... If you're looking for a no annual fee travel card, I mean, it has, it's just a great all around card. There's even, I think, a intro balance transfer offer. It's pretty dope. I don't know what took me so long to sign up for this card, but I love it. Love it. Love it. And that is my boost.
Okay.
I carry the weight of that brown boost, brown break today.
Yeah, you did. That was you. All you, boo boo. Yeah.
Let's get into this email inbox and answer some questions. How about that?
Okay.
So you guys know you can hit us up at brownambitionpodcast.com. Okay. And I left it, I'm like opening, like the goalpost is open. All you got to do is bring it home, Tiff.
My bad.
BrownAmbitionPodcast.com.
.com.
Got it. And ask us anything on the website, or you can email us directly at brownambitionpodcast@gmail.com with your questions.
Yes.
We have a couple of awesome questions for today. What should we start with? Okay, so this one, this law school student, I think I like her question, so we'll start with her. She asked to be remain anonymous. Her question is a cry for help. She says, "Hello, I'm a first-year law student at a prestigious law school. I'm 22 years old and will be approaching 25 when I graduate. I currently have $11,000 in student loan debt from my undergrad, but I'm on track to have $150,000 in debt from law school. I'd like to know what I can do to become more knowledgeable about finances so I can make the best financial decisions in law school and after. My goal is to be debt-free by 30, and my credit score is currently 730. Help."
So how much debt does she currently have, or he currently have?
She only has $11,000 in debt right now from undergrad, but she's on track to have, so over 3 years, it's not unusual actually, 3 years of law school, she'll have $150,000 in debt, which a lot of it, like many law school students, she doesn't say, but I'm assuming a lot of that is going to be private school debt because, well, I think you max out a certain level of federal student loans you can take, or maybe I'm wrong, but it could be federal or private. But 150K. Ouch. So let's talk about her options, because she knows she's graduating with this debt. She wants to get ahead of it.
Honestly, I would put a lot of work, and I didn't do this, and I'm kind of disappointed because I'm sure I could have gotten at least some assistance. I would put, like, I'm assuming you're not in law school yet, so whatever that kind of 6 months, a year breakup, I guess, I don't know, from when you graduate undergrad to when you enter law school.
She says I'm a first-year law school student. So it sounds like she's already in school. Yep.
Oh, okay. Because honestly, one of the regrets that I made when I got my master's degree is that I didn't put hardly any effort into looking for, like, scholarships and assistance, you know? Mm. And even if it was $10,000, like over time of the interest that $10,000 accrued and what I owe now, it would have saved me a lot of money. So it's not too late, obviously, but I would set aside some time to look to see what kind of assistance you can possibly drum up, because student loan forgiveness, they've already changed. I was reading an article, but forgiveness is not the same. Like, you know, the president had been threatening to dismantle student loan forgiveness, at least as we know it. And for the most part, he has. So the ability to get your loans forgiven is not the, you just don't have the same opportunity to do so. One of my mentees is a lawyer now, but I remember when she first graduated, yo, her loan payment, Mandy, was like $900 a month. And I was like, wait.
I've heard worse. I've heard double, triple that. Yeah, it's crazy.
I don't even know what that means. She was like, so I'm just never going to move out of my mom's house. I'm just going to live here forever. And thankfully, she opened up her scope of where she could work, because she's from Jersey. She ended up finding a job in Connecticut, I want to say, that paid really, really well. So one of the things I remember, she wanted to get a really fancy apartment, and I talked her into not doing so. I think the apartment she wanted to get was like $2,200 or $2,300 a month. And I was like, Menti, I hear you, but then you're just going to be beholden to that apartment. So I was able to go online and find like a less expensive apartment. I think we found one for like $1,700, but it was still really nice. It was actually really close to where she was working. So if you can't find assistance, like with your actual loans, just making sure that you're making the right choices with how you're spending the money. Cause I'm assuming right in law school that some of that money is used for like housing and all that kind of stuff. Correct?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know what law school. No, I don't know. I'm assuming it's for tuition and room and board, but I don't know for sure. I want to say with law school, one, you're entering what, I don't know what your focus is going to be, but what could potentially be a really high paying job. And the law school grads that I know, a couple of my friends in New York have managed to pay off their student loan debt, and it was six figures as well within a few years, because with law schools, private law firms, you have the opportunity to make bonuses and a really fat signing bonuses even sometimes, and then you get like annual bonuses that help pay off those student loans. So it's different, you know, a law school grad versus like, I don't know, a teacher with $150,000, you know, student loan debt. It's almost less scary. I mean, it's still obviously a ton of debt, but because of your profession, you may be set up to pay it off a lot more quickly than other professions. And Tiff, you mentioned loan forgiveness programs. There, a lot of states offer loan assistance programs for lawyers if you're willing to, like nurses or teachers, if you're willing to work in certain areas, less desirable areas or areas where there's higher poverty rates. They sometimes offer loan forgiveness through those programs. And there's a website called the Equal Justice Works Directory. I'm getting this information from our Magnify Money's Guide to Loan Forgiveness, where we break it down by profession. So I'm happy to send this your way because there are some state programs maybe you want to look into for loan forgiveness. And you can't, I know private, if they're private student loans and they're, you have, you graduate and they have pretty high interest rates, you can look into refinancing your student loans to get a lower interest rate, especially if your credit score, like you said, is 730. That's awesome. And you may be able to refinance and get a lower rate after you get out of school and stay on top of those.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard. I mean, because luckily you're in a profession that does tend to pay, you know, pay really well. But you're also entering into a profession that where it garners just a lot of debt. So just being mindful of how much you're borrowing, that you're not borrowing more than you need. And two, afterwards, making choices that are going to allow you to pay that debt off faster.
Yes, ma'am. And don't start living that high paid lawyer lifestyle as soon as you start getting paid, because remember, you haven't actually earned the money yet, you know, like take it paycheck by paycheck and don't forget about that debt. And any, you know, she mentions that if you're in law school, you can get a good summer internship that may net you up to $30,000 in one summer. Okay, great. So see if you can go ahead and make payments on your student loans to get ahead of it. Cause she says that, that $150,000 is already starting to accrue interest. Mm-hmm. So if you can make a payment even while you're in school, that would obviously be even better.
Yeah.
But good luck, and let me know what area of law you go into. Maybe I'll give you a call one day and maybe be a client. Who knows? Thank you for your question. All right. Next question. This comes from another anonymous listener. Okay. She says, our last episode last week was a little bit about financial FOMO. She has kind of a credit card FOMO experience. She says, one of my coworkers recently shared with me how she's been able to fund all of her fabulous trips with her husband with travel and rewards credit cards. I'd like to sign up for one so my husband can take more trips, but I'm not sure which is the best option. And also, I don't want to have too much open credit available. We're in good financial standing with 800 plus credit scores, but don't want to jeopardize our position by overextending ourselves. Question is there a certain number of credit cards that are too much? And what is the best option if we're looking for travel and rewards credit cards to maximize points for travel? Sincerely, Anonymous.
Well, I understand not wanting to have too much credit cards open. I don't know that there's like a specific number. I mean, there are like those super travel hacker guys who have like a ton. I feel like two or three is fine, I guess. I mean, three or less, but I feel like it really all depends on how responsible you are.
Three or less. I have like 10. I don't know how I got 10, but I have 10.
But I mean, also you're responsible. So it's kind of like, well, to me, it really depends on your level of responsibility. So, you know, you could have a ton of cards and you've got this great utilization rate because you're not utilizing as much credit as you could. And that's fine. And you can have one and be like, I'm good to rock out with this. I feel like it really just depends on, it's not so many how many cards, but how you're using them. And honestly, the best way to use cards, if you're wanting to use it for travel, if you are responsible enough to do this, is to put your bills on that travel card and then pay it off in full every month. And then that way you're earning as many points as possible, paying things you were going to pay anyway. But to me, that's like, you know, graduate level usage of credit cards, because what you don't want is to put your bills on a card and not be able to pay. So now you owe bills and you owe a credit card. But if you're, you know, you got a great automated system and you're like, you know, the household bills are, you know, $3,000, $5,000 a month, and we could pay that off every month because we pay the bills anyway. You know, you could certainly try that. I know people who do that and get one or two trips a year. What I do, because I have a business, is that one of my marketing cards is a travel rewards card. And so I spend a lot of money on marketing. And so it can earn me anywhere from sometimes three trips a year, certainly enough for flights, like three or four flights a year. So that's the way I use that, because we pay, my business pays off its credit card every month. So I earn a good amount of trips, plus two, I travel a lot. And so I earn a lot of money and or a lot of flights and points. So that's what I would suggest, that there's nothing wrong with a credit card if used wisely. But the only way you're going to really earn enough points to do so is that if you actually use that card and actually use it a lot. And the easiest way to use it a lot is to use it for things you're paying for anyway.
Yeah, if traveling, I would say the best travel credit cards out there are ones that give you the most points for traveling. So if you don't already travel consistently, it can be difficult to accrue enough points to make the card really worth it. And there are cards that maybe you can spend enough to earn that sign-up bonus, which is nice. And maybe you'll get like 50,000 points and you can take a trip somewhere. But then after that, you may find it hard to accrue enough points to really make, you know, a meaningful debt in travel expenses, unless you're really continuing to spend a large amount in the key categories where you earn the most points, which, you know, for like the top cards, like Chase Sapphire Reserve, for example, you only get 3 points back on travel related purchases, or not travel and dining purchases. So if you don't travel a lot or eat out a lot, then maybe it wouldn't be the most, you know, wouldn't make the most sense for you. There's like flat rate cashback cards that maybe, if you're not, you know, if you don't have any specific spending in any one category, you know, a flat cash back card, like a Citi Double Cash card, or Ally has a new credit card, I think gives you 2% cash back on some purchases. I like having a good, and I'll tell you through this, through our renovation, for example, we have been charging, everything, cause it's not like it doesn't fit any particular rewards category. The spending like for tile and for toilets and crap. Unfortunately, there's no toilet credit card. But we've been using a flat rate cashback card, the Citi Double Cash, and we've made hundreds of dollars back, in our spending so far, which is nice. And then I have my travel card for travel related purchases that I use, strategically there. And if you're looking, I know you want the best option. There's so many. I'm going to send a link to a couple of roundups on best travel credit cards, and then you can maybe pick the one that's right for you.
Yeah.
That fits your lifestyle.
So depending on basically what kind of spending you do. So, you know, Mandy's right. Sometimes you're like, oh, and too, you know, as you start to travel more, if the card does work, really get loyal to an airline, because that's going to help maximize your card. So you look wherever you fly out of, typically what airline has a hub there. So for me, I live in Newark. So 9 times out of 10, I'm flying out of Newark. And the hub for United has their hub in Newark. So I'm loyal to United, not because of United in particular, but because I know that I'm going to have to fly United anyway, typically. So I'm able to earn points. So even if like I just came back, I just taped the reel in LA. So even though I didn't pay for my flight, the producers did, I still got to earn points. So I always remember to add my points. So that way I'm earning points from the actual airline, and I'm earning points from the actual card. And so when the next time I go to travel somewhere, sometimes I'll buy my points with my airline points, and then I'll buy my husband's flight with his, with the card points. And so that way everybody wins.
That's awesome. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you make purchases for your office too, it's a good chance to earn rewards.
So and thanks. Groupon is your friend. Have you ever gone on a Groupon trip, Mandy?
Yeah, I did once. We went to Turkey using a Groupon like in 2013.
Did you like it?
Oh, I loved it. Yeah, it was cool. It was, and you know what? It was funny because we got like a package tour of Turkey where it was like airfare, travel, lodging, all that included. And then we were mentioning the Groupon because I just assumed everybody used the Groupon, but like a lot of people didn't use the Groupon. They just booked it through the, and they got really mad. But we paid like $1,000 less. Yeah, it was dope. Yes.
Yeah, so that too. Think about, you know, like you could get really creative with travel. Like, what? I've been on like 3 or 4 Groupon, and I've never had a bad time, and I've never had like a scammy time. And two, there's if you're looking to travel to Europe, I love EuropeanDestinations.com. I found, like, I did Greece and Turkey 1 year. I think it was $12.50. It included all flights, all hotels, and you get to pick your own hotel. So I made sure to pick hotels that had breakfast included for $1,250. And I think we were gone. It was my sister and I. I think we were gone for, I want to say it was 7 to 10 days, I think it was about. So it was, and it was amazing. So we got to go to Athens. We got to go to Santorini, Greece, and we got to go to Istanbul, Turkey for $1,200. And like I said, included flight from New Jersey. No, I think we left from New York to Greece. And from Greece to Santorini, which is also Greece, and Santorini to Istanbul, and then back home. So there are deals out there, even if it's not like free vacations, there are definitely deals out there to be had.
Exactly. And I'm going to send you that link to a couple of, you know, good travel rewards card options. And again, these are the cards that, you know, if we mentioned credit cards on the show, they're just the cards that we like. You know, you've got to find the card that's right for you. And we don't endorse any particular card for any reason other than that it fits our lives and we like it. Right, yeah. Tiff?
Yeah, it's like my get up and go. You better go ahead, Chase card. Remember, I could never get the name right.
The Chase Good Time card.
Get you a flight, Chase card. I'm like, wait, what card is that? It sounds like those commercials that they do to focus like on their black demographic. So they have to get extra like, hey, 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 got you a car, Chase card. And you're like, you didn't have to do all of that. Yeah. Or they make a hip hop beat for it. You're like, you know, I like country music, but okay. Yeah. You want to take one more question?
No. I'm done. Those are the two I chose.
No, that's fine by me.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.